Warning, this episode contains stories about murder and assault. Listener discretion is advised. Oh hey! Welcome back to the Konya History Club. We're so happy you could join us again. As always, grab a seat, grab a drink, and let's get this meeting started. I'm Camille and this is Ben, and for the whole month of October, we're going to be talking about the horrors of our history. For tonight, we're going to start off by talking about some murders that have happened in the Philippines. Alright. So, I'm going first. Tonight, I'm going to be talking about the murder of Elsa Santos Castillo. Elsa Santos Castillo, also known as Elsie, and Stephen Mark Wisenhunt, or Stephen, were lovers. They met at the Apex Motor Corporation, and although they were both married, they were estranged from their respective spouses. And when rumors started going around about the relationship between them, Elsie allegedly resigned from Apex to avoid the rumors. But although she left, it appears that they still continued their relationship. A few months later, Demetrio Ravelo, an Apex employee assigned to drive Stephen, went to pick Stephen up from his condo unit and was ordered by Stephen to pick up Elsie at her parents' house at 10:30. When Demetrio arrived to pick up Elsa, she was standing at a corner near her parents' house, wearing a violet-colored blouse with floral prints, and was carrying three bags, a paper bag, a violet Giordano bag, and a thick brown leather bag. He thought nothing of it and brought her to Stephen's condo. When Demetrio returned, Stephen asked him to stay, asking him to drive Elsa home at 10 p.m. And so Demetrio waited. But until a little past 10 p.m, he didn't hear anything from Elsie or Stephen. So he told the housemaid, Lucy, that he was going home. The following day, Demetrio again waited outside Stephen's unit, and at around noon, Lucy asked him if he had seen a kitchen knife, saying that the same was missing. Finding that Demetrio didn't know where it was, Lucy went to ask Stephen, who then told her that the knife was in his bedroom. The next day, Demetrio went to do errands for Stephen at Apex, after which he stayed at the servants' quarters and watched TV. While he was, Stephen came in and asked Demetrio how long he would work for Stephen, and Demetrio replied that he was willing to work for him forever and expressed his full trust in him. Upon hearing this, Stephen broke down crying and embraced Demetrio, saying, "May problema ako, Rio." Demetrio asked what it was, and Stephen told him everything, or at least his version of everything. Stephen told him that Elsie was dead. Demetrio asked, "Bakit mo siya pinatay?" And Stephen answered that he didn't kill Elsa, but that she died of bangungot. Demetrio suggested that Elsa's body be autopsied, but Stephen said that he had already beheaded her. He asked Demetrio if he wanted to see the decapitated body, but Demetrio refused. They then went to buy plastic bags, and Stephen asked Demetrio to help him wrap the body in them. Demetrio entered Stephen's bathroom and found the dismembered hands, feet, trunk, and head of a woman. He lifted the severed head by the hair, and when he lifted it, he saw Elsa's face. He placed this in a black trash bag. They then loaded the body parts in the trunk of Stephen's car, and the two drove off. Later, Stephen took out the plastic bags and dumped them by the roadside. Stephen then told Demetrio, "Tayo na, Rio, tuloy na tayo sa Bataan." And on the way there, Stephen ordered Demetrio to stop the car on top of a bridge and threw Elsie's clothes over the bridge. As they continued their trip, Stephen would throw out Elsie's bags out of the car, over bridges and other places. Demetrio testified that that night he was unable to sleep for fear that he would be next. The next morning, Stephen ordered Demetrio to clean the trunk of the car, saying, "Rio, linisan mo ang sasakyan para ang compartment hindi babaho." Before he left, Stephen told him, "Rio, you and your family can go on a vacation. I will give you money." And gave him money to go home. When Demetrio got home, he immediately told his family what had happened. His wife told them to report the incident. The case was referred to the National Bureau of Investigation. And although the head of the Anti-Organized Crime Division initially could not believe what he was hearing and thought that Demetrio was just exaggerating, he dispatched a team of NBI agents. And so the group headed to Laguna, and there they found a group of people gathered around the mutilated parts of a human body along the road. The body parts had been discovered by tricycle drivers, and the Santa Rosa police was already conducting an investigation. When the group retraced the route that Demetrio took with Stephen, they were able to recover some of the items that had been tossed out by Stephen from the car. When Stephen was brought in by the NBI, he alleged that this was the first time he was learning of Elsie's death, and denied having anything to do with her death, saying that he had no reason to kill her since he was in love with her. Despite his denials, however, it was found that the physical evidence against Stephen was damning. The findings of the forensic biologist on the examination of the hair samples and bloodstains all confirm Elsie's death inside Stephen's bedroom, and the autopsy report revealed that Elsa was stabbed at least 3 times on the chest. This, taken with Demetrio's testimony that Stephen kept the kitchen knife inside his bedroom, led to the fact that Stephen stabbed Elsa. The court deciding the case said, "Physical evidence is a mute but eloquent manifestation of the truth," and found him guilty beyond reasonable doubt of the murder of Elsa Santos Castillo. So, you know, a logical response, I guess. if you see someone na nabangungot, yeah, you know, the logical response is...
Pugutan mo, puta.
Yeah, pugutan mo ng ulo. And so, you know, as when he told Demetrio that, when Demetrio suggested that Elsie's body be autopsied, sinabi niya nga na napugutan na niya ng ulo, and he asked Demetrio if he wanted to see the decapitated body, and of course Demetrio refused. I mean, I would too. I wouldn't be like, "Tara pare, tinan natin yan."
Parang proud, you want to see it?
You want to see it?
Hindi lang pinugutan eh, chinop-chop eh, puta.
Yeah, and for just an FYI for, you know, for some people that might not know this, here in the Philippines, sometimes, well, actually it's kind of a colloquial term that women who are found dismembered are referred to usually as chop-chop ladies.
Yung chop-chop lady though, that term, it's like so grotesque.
Yeah, it is. It is so grotesque. That's how people some refer to these kinds of incidents is that the victim was a chop-chop lady. And the si Stephen was deported in 2013. So that was 12 years later. And his supposed 25-year sentence was commuted by 6 years. So, instead of 25.
Fuck? Why would you refuse an autopsy? Parang, sobrang sketchy yung ano.
I mean, not even just...
So, parang good thinking na lang for Demetrio.
Yeah, it's just not even just like refusing the autopsy. Just beheading someone who died from a bangungot is... is questionable at the very least.
Maybe kasi parang foreigner siya. Na he thought the term was bongongot, pero iba pala yung nangyari kay Elsie. Sinangiban siya, so he had to kill her.
Nah, dude. I don't think it's a cultural thing. I don't think it's a cultural difference. I don't think it was a cultural difference.
I was thinking, like, what if he had like a legit belief, you know, like a legit belief that he had to kill Elsie, parang ganun.
Uh-huh.
I mean, of course, parang mentally unstable pa rin, pero parang what if he had like a legit reason to kill her? Yun yung iniisip ko, what if?
What if? I think it was just I think it was well, this is my is my guess is maybe it was like a fight or something, maybe, and then at the heat of the moment he stabbed her.
I think it's most likely yun nga, parang he really intended to kill her, probably like a crime of passion. I think there really was like a intent for him to kill her. We just don't know the exact specific, you know, motive.
Yeah, hindi na mention like why he did it, but regardless of his reason for doing it, I mean, like, yun nga, like, if you say it was like a fit of rage, like you lost your senses, you stabbed the person, that's already bad enough. But like, to have the idea of, you know, dismembering someone, ano ba yun? Parang di mo lang siya pwedeng trip-trip mo lang siyang gagawin. Parang at the spur of a moment, yeah, na parang, yeah, gagawin mo siya. Like, you would really have to have decided na, okay, like, I'm gonna dismember her.
Yeah, exactly. You need to have like a strong resolve na parang, yeah, yeah, this, yeah, is happening. I'm, yeah, doing it.
Parang you would really, yun nga, like, you would really have to have a strong resolve to go through with it. Kasi he didn't just like chop off one arm or something like that. He beheaded her, chopped off both arms and both legs.
While serial killers are a dime a dozen in other countries, they are virtually unheard of here in the Philippines. However, that does not mean to say we've never had one before. Introducing the Magalang Serial Killer Priest, the first documented serial killer in the Philippines is ironically a Filipino priest. In 1812, when the parish of Magalang was still on secular control, a young but ambitious secular priest was installed. Father Juan Severino Maliari took helm until he was relieved in 1826. His brief biography was initially written by the psychiatrist-turned-historian Dr. Luciano Santiago. According to his findings, Father Maliari was born in Makabebe, Pampanga. He took his solemn profession at the Pontifical and Royal University of Santo Tomas. He was ordained in 1809 and he was appointed as coadjutor or assistant parish priest of Bacolor, Lubao, and Yapan. He later competed for the position of parish priest in parishes of Orani Mariveles, Lubao, and as chaplain of Port of Cavite. After his several attempts, he was successfully included to the Terna, but he was never chosen by the higher authorities to those positions. Later, he finally attained his status as a fully pledged parish in the sleepy and large town of Magalang. The town itself was still in the second town proper, located in San Bartolome.
later it will be known as Balen Malacuan. During his tenure in Magalang, Father Malyari sought some relief from the stresses of his priestly life. What happened next was the stuff of horror movies. Over a period of 10 years, a series of unexplained murders took place in Magalang, a total of 57 murders. Without a perpetrator being arrested or even being identified, within those 10 years, he was able to get away with it. However, in 1826, he was arrested and imprisoned like a common criminal. Even the Spanish chronicler, Sinibaldo de Ma, wrote that the attorney on that case talked in pathetic terms of the indescribable and barbarous prodigality of bloodshed by that monster. According to some accounts, Father Malyari claimed that he had murdered his parishioners because he believed that he could by this means save his mother, who he persuaded himself had been bewitched. After the verdict was served in 1840, he was executed by hanging. This earned him as the first Filipino priest executed by the Spanish colonial government. Dr. Santiago added that Father Malyari was a victim of injustice because Spain was already pioneered the human treatment of mental patients, having founded one of the first psychiatric institutions in Europe. In the Philippines, Hospicio de San Jose was already operating for 15 years. So probably, the priest should have been taken there instead of prison. Despite this, the legend of the Kapampangan Filipino priest serial killer lives on. Siya pala yung first guy.
Uh-huh.
Yung second place, yung Gumborza. So
siya yung OG.
Siya yung OG. He's the first guy. The first Filipino priest to be hanged. He claims that title. And, you know, he earned it.
He earned that spot, yeah. I agree. I feel like he did earn that spot.
Sadly, walang masyadong accounts talaga on how he killed the people.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was curious about. Pa to. Like, so do we make up our own? Like, how he did it? Because in my mind, since he's a priest, it would be like during confession. Tapos, you know, biglan lang siya may isistick na parang thing through the, di ba parang meron yung parang holes sa ano, sa confessional box.
Para you can speak to them. Yeah.
Yeah. And parang may isistick through lang siya dun. Bam, you're dead.
Yeah. Pwede rin. Or, pag nagbibigay siya ng ostras, say ah, ganun. Paano ba yun?
Say aw.
Paano ba yun? Paano ba binibigay ang ostras? Say aw.
Body of Christ. They say body of Christ, not say aw. Parang ano, here comes the airplane.
Or instead of body, it was a knife.
Say ah. That's when he says it. That's when he says say ah. And that's you know, that should have tipped them off because he said say ah instead of the body of Christ. That's how you know if you're gonna get stabbed in the mouth. Is if the priest says say ah instead of the body of Christ.
I'm wondering though, yung actual paano niya nagawa yung ano. Killings.
I don't know, kasi 'di ba sabi mo, yung sabi nung guy was it was yung belief niya na nabewitch yung nanay niya. Is that, am I recalling that correctly?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It's probably like a ritualistic thing, right? Parang, it can't have just been parang... But then, I'm trying to wrap my head around it. Like, ano yung connect nung pagpatay niya ng 57 people sa pag-bewitch nung nanay niya? Like, was he thinking na mare-release yung nanay niya sa curse if he killed people?
Like, maybe. Or maybe he needed the blood of people. You know?
Of 57 people? Or maybe he just killed one person and maybe, then he got a taste for it and then was like, you know what? I feel like I'm gonna make this my pastime. That it?
Ayun nga, parang nandun na in-imply. Hindi mo in-imply, pero parang during his tenure, Father Maliari sought some relief from the stresses of his priestly life.
By killing people!
Kapagod na.
Kapagod na, makapatay nga.
And you know, like, another point to get from this story is that, you know, just because yung position ng person or what they present themselves to be is like good, yun nga, pari na to, pero pumatay pa rin siya ng 57 people. Like, you know, kung may na talagang something sketchy na nangyayari with that person, you know, makibaka na tayo.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Inquire, don't, ano ba, don't prejudge.
It doesn't matter what their stature is or what their position is. If they did something bad or illegal, that's it. It doesn't matter what their position is. They still did something illegal.
Kailangan nila lang sumagot sa batas.
Exactly. They have to answer to the law.
Huwag na nating paabutin ng 10 years.
Huwag na nating paabutin ng 57 deaths, okay? No matter what they're supposed to be in society, if they did something wrong, they have to pay for it. At the end of the day, they have to pay for it.
With that, we end our meeting. Thank you for joining us this week in learning more about the horrors of Philippine history. Let us hear from you and tell us how we can do better. Reach out to us on Twitter at Konyo History Club or at KonyoHistoryClub@gmail.com. Support the club by clicking the referral link below. We hope you come back next week for another meeting where we can embark on another journey towards the unknown. Again, I'm Ben, and that's Camille, and this has been the Konyo History Club.
Say, ah!